On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
He's the first voice you hear 3 hours before kickoff and the first voice you hear after the final whistle.
Future Hall of Fame receiver, future Hall of Fame quarterback, being able to figure it out for the last half of the season.
Here's the new Chiefs Radio Network pregame and postgame show host, Josh Briscoe.
All right, we'll talk to Josh Briscoe momentarily, get his take on everything that went on with the schedule release. But also with the schedule release, we have the schedule release videos, and the numbers are out for the schedule release videos, fellas. Joshua Briscoe, Mac Morey, which schedule release video do you think was the most viewed in the NFL?
Briscoe?
I'll go first. I'll say that the Chargers probably did it again. There's a very high quality, and they are the gold standard. I have something on the Chiefs one that I'm excited about, but the Chargers have to lead the way there, right?
Okay, who do you say, Mac?
That was a terrible Halo song. But yeah, it's absolutely got to be the Chargers.
Chargers, yeah, they are. 13 million views of that.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. About 5 Damn. Million watched the sourdough thing that went on here in Kansas City a couple of days ago. Jets come in at number 2. A lot of people didn't like their video I saw on X, which means it was probably good. 6.7 million as number 2. So twice as many people watched the Chargers video as they watched the second one in the Jets. The Raiders come in at number 3. The Jags come in at number 4. And the Browns, for whatever reason, round out the numbers there at number 5 with 4.3. These videos, guys, are getting more than an NBA playoff game.
And I enjoy it because it does let you have some of these social teams who, like, look, you're running a social page for an NFL football team. You got to operate within the confines of what you're supposed to do for the most part. They actually do get to, like, show their personality at this exact point. I'll admit, fellas, I have had my share of schedule release announcement fatigue over the years. But I do like it whenever you can tell which of the social teams really, really have something to get off their chest creatively.
Yeah, it really was something fun. And then now they're investing all kinds of money. I mean, the Chiefs having, you know, Hollywood actors in theirs doing their whole thing. What did you think of the Chiefs schedule release video?
I really enjoyed it because I did a huge double take. Obviously, everyone's going to open it and recognize Rob Riggle. But it took me a second to recognize Lisa Gilroy playing the wife, or I guess ex-wife, in the QB Chiefs thing.
Right.
She is a hysterical comedian who I've seen in a bunch of improv sketch comedy shows. There's a streaming service called Dropout that she's on a bunch. So I've become a fan of hers over the last couple of years. And then suddenly at 6:30 last night, wait a second. Is that Lisa Gilroy in the Chiefs schedule announcement? She's who obviously working pretty PG there with Riggle. But I thought that was funny. I love an improv scene with an estranged couple trying to get through their problems in front of a TV camera. It's a really good bit. I was a fan of theirs.
Yeah, no, I thought so too. I thought it was really funny, really humorous. The Bengals thing was great where they sniffed the candle and they
awesome.
All threw up and,
yeah.
you know, did that. So no, I thought it was really good and really creative by the Chiefs to do something kind of the outside the box thinking, because they really needed to come back from the sour bread fiasco of 2026, I guess.
I only heard the last half or so, I think, of your conversation with Mitch earlier. Did you ask him about the cowboy costume and the whole out? Did he get to keep that? Is he going to bring that out week one?
Well, we didn't get there, but he did say now his entire family and friend group refer to him as Woody from Toy Story.
That's awesome. That's so great.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for that. And Matt McMullen also with a really excellent cameo. Yeah, no, I thought everybody, the entire cast there, I think a cast of 4 people of memory serves, I think the cast really shined.
They really did. They were outstanding. I'm just more disappointed, I think, quite honestly, that more teams didn't go with the Russini-Vrabel thing. It was like only the Chargers decided to do something like that. And the NFL released a statement giving everybody permission to make fun of them.
Yeah, and even I missed it in the Chargers one at first and ended up seeing the kind of Easter egg after the fact. But yeah, felt like everybody went ahead and held off the dogs on that one, which again, like, I guess I understand that at some point you have to play the Patriots for most of these teams, and maybe you don't want any of that to come around. But I thought we would see the Chargers take a little bit of a bigger swing. They have been the least risk-averse in terms of touching some of the risky topics around schedule release time. And, yeah, I was a little surprised also that everybody showed some restraint on the biggest NFL story of the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, but also, too, Josh, everybody's got a closet, right? You don't want everybody rummaging through yours. So this is the
That's
NFL.
Right. Yeah, you don't want your team to be the subject of next year's schedule release video or next year's entire offseason or the next New York Post story, for that matter. So, yeah, no, I think that that makes sense.
All right. And as Bob mentioned, I mean, it is their Super Bowl because they know that they won't make a real one. The Chiefs still trying to do that. Josh, I know you've already done this. I've got them winning 11 games. Go through the whole schedule. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. I've got 11-6.
I've got 17-0.
He's got 17-0, 35-0 each game. I want to get into the nitty-gritty and specific stretches of the season, but just overall, how do you feel?
This is going to absolutely boggle your mind. I'm kind of realizing now, how did I not do that? I have not just gone game by game. And I think it's because there is such a clean cutoff in week 5 with that super early bye week that you can look at those first 4 games. And really, I think it's partially because this is a truly different version of the Chiefs than the team we saw last year. And like, we knew that before the schedule came out, obviously. We knew the defense has been totally overhauled and there have been plenty of changes on the offensive side and Kenneth Walker, and you're going to see kind of how they evolve offensively. But I look at it, again, just kind of in that first quarter of the season, that is a legitimately massive test out of the gate against a good Broncos team. I don't think that they're going to be perennial Super Bowl contenders, but that's a very good defense, and they've got real weapons to test this new secondary. The Colts in week 2, again, like a little bit of a paper tiger last year. You assume Daniel Jones is ready for that game, and then you should have an easier time with the Dolphins and Raiders. But if they come out in the first couple of weeks, if they lose in week 1 or God forbid, lose the first 2 weeks of the season, if you're 2-2 at the bye, people are going to be looking around going, man, they lost to 2 good teams in the AFC and then rebounded against 2 crummy ones. Maybe the Chiefs really are on a downward trajectory. On the other hand, if they come out and they smoke the Broncos in prime time and they smoke the Colts in week 2 and handle their business against the Dolphins and Raiders, then that entire bye week is going to be like, okay, well, everybody overreacted last year. The Chiefs had a weird down year. Mahomes got hurt late. All sorts of things that didn't quite line up, but now they're 4-0 with 2 wins over legit AFC contenders and looking like the Chiefs we've grown to know and perhaps in their case know and hate in recent years. There is a lot on the table in front of them in week 4, and then that stretch in the back half of the season is the time when you really have to prove it again. It's a fascinating schedule. It doesn't feel like a third place schedule. It's largely because you play the NFC West, but I really am kind of fascinated with the way that it came together because I think it's bookended with some tremendous tests. And in the middle, you're on the road for like 2 months. So yeah. It really is fascinating.
Yeah, start at home, finish at home, and go visit everybody else during the middle of the season. And that's kind of where it is. I mean, you got that 3-game stretch at Buffalo, at the Rams, and at Cincinnati. Obviously, that's a big game, a big 3-game stretch on the road, but then it doesn't get any easier. You come home for the Patriots and the 49ers, and then you finish off with the Chargers and Raiders, obviously, to end out this season. But like that end of the season, man, that could be very intriguing. And I'll ask you the same question I asked Caliendo and the same question I've asked Mac. Of those teams at the end of the season, starting with that Buffalo game all the way down, which one of those playoff teams is not going to be in the playoffs? Mac said the 49ers. I think the Patriots. Who do you think?
I guess there'd be pretty good money in doubting the Bengals in recent years as well. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. But like, one of those teams is not going to look nearly as fresh by that point as they do right now. I kind of... Maybe the Vrabel stuff has just been ringing my ears too much. I do kind of like the Patriots as a little bit of a regression team.
I do
like,
too. Yeah,
they still have they have the quarterback, and I believe in Drake May, not to like Patrick Mahomes levels, but you know that he's very good, if not like truly elite right now. Having the quarterback makes it a little harder for the bottom to fall out. And to Mac's credit, like the Niners are always kind of in that fluctuation between just being Super Bowl favorites and weirdly kind of needing a year to reset. That's an interesting pattern that they've had. But I guess I'll go with Bengals and we'll have 3 different answers there.
Okay.
But what's crazy is that Bills, Rams, Bengals, Patriots, Niners run and Chargers that we're talking about, every one of those teams, at least before the schedule came out, I can't imagine it's changed since, Every one of those teams had an over-under for their win total this year of at least 9.5, and nobody has one over 11.5. That was the Rams. I think somebody else might have been 11.5 as well. But every single team in that stretch, essentially the books are telling you, like, this is going to be a group of playoff teams. Again, I think you're right that someone's going to fall off before we actually get to late November, early December, through the rest of 2026. But it is a, like, truly special run in terms of what's expected from all six of those teams in that window.
Yeah, it is a bear towards the end of that season, but, you know, Mahomes will be healthy, we'll have Worthy, and we'll have Rice playing good because we got a new coach in there. The defense will be ready to roll by that point in the season, and so I think this team is going to be good at the beginning of the year. They're going to have a little growing pains in the middle, and they're going to finish really strong, you know, and I think this is going to be a team that's going to gain so much confidence with these young players as this season moves along, especially, I think, in those first 5 weeks of the season. They have a real chance to gain some confidence and do some good things, playing at home early on, getting that crowd behind you. I think that's kind of a good way to kind of indoctrinate a lot of these young rookies into this thing, too.
Yeah, and especially thinking about the defensive side of the ball, which is almost feels like it's basically the entire rookie class anyway, but specifically thinking about all those changes on the defensive side, obviously not rookies, but like Noel Williams is probably going to have to get used to being hopefully a 17-game starter. Ashton Gelati is going to have to be in a position where you can rely on him regularly in that early stretch. And then obviously all the rookies, the entire secondary. Aloe Gilman, no rookie, but he is new in Spags' system. So I do think, and I said this well before we knew the schedule, I think it's okay and it's probably reasonable to expect that there will be some growing pains, especially on defense and especially in that secondary, because that's how it's worked when Spags has had his big resets. He can kind of bring you along in the Steve Spagnuolo 101 curriculum, but you're going to have some bumps and bruises while the new pieces are trying to mesh together. And, you know, there's a little bit of consistency with, like, Shamari Ponner, but even Jaden Hicks wasn't a consistent player last year. So I do think it's going to be an issue of just trying to get through, again, like a Broncos team that suddenly has real wide receiving weapons, like multiples of them. The Colts, to a lesser extent, but still have the ability to take advantage of you if you fail to communicate an assignment or something like that. So I do think I'm trying to, like, set my expectations to where if it is a little bumpy specifically for this retooled secondary in the first quarter of the season, I'm not going to freak out about that because we've seen what happens by week 12, week 14, by the playoffs, hopefully, where then Spags' defense so often seems to really hit its stride because everybody's communicating more freely. But even then, that takes years sometimes. So I think also, I mean, I would trust you, Stagnolo, with my life, much less my defense. I think you have to expect that he's going to try to figure out the way to make sure you're not getting behind the proverbial sticks season long because you're trying to install too much early on. It's just kind of back to that McDuffie, Karloftis draft class era of figuring out how to make these young guys be starting caliber players out of the gate. And then by the end of the season, they have the expertise in your defense that you can do whatever you want in January.
Josh, we appreciate the time. Enjoy more schedule release conversations as the weekend goes along. We'll talk to you again soon, my man.
Thanks, Briscoe.
Sounds good, fellas. Man, I was going to do the whole segment as Morgan Freeman today. I just remembered. Darn, what a missed opportunity.
You should have done it. You should have done it. That's Josh Briscoe. You can catch him pregame, postgame right here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up, Mac and I disagree about something that Mitch said. We'll tell you what it is next.
Hey, it's Bobby Witt Jr., and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
I'll tell you, this year we partnered with KCUC, who's donating $50 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation for every home run the Boys in Blue hit this season. 1 in 8 men will face prostate cancer. Early detection saves lives. At KCUC, Kansas City's largest, most experienced, and most advanced urology team, you see the best in KC. Schedule today at KCUC.com. NFL.com. I was doing the numbers, Mac, in the break a little bit about the Royals, and I told you months ago, or whenever we started this thing, 83-79 is kind of the floor of where they need to be if they want to be considered a playoff team. They're 19-25. They can afford 54 more losses. The Royals have to go 64-54 the rest of the way to beat that, or to meet at the bare minimum that 83-79 mark. So they need to be 10 games over 500 the rest of the season in total if they are going to make it into that 83-79 record to give them a shot to make it into the playoffs. Do you believe that they will play 10 games over 500 the rest of the way?
No, and if there's anyone out there saying yes, my immediate question would be, what makes you say yes?
What makes you say yes?
Yeah, what is there? And I'm really grasping to try and find some sort of positivity. I hate being the negative Nancy here, and I think we both have been, but it's merited.
It's merited.
Justified.
Yeah,
it's what
earned.
We've seen. We've seen bad baseball, mm-hmm. and for the majority of the first 40 games of the season, there was a bit of a stretch in there that gave a flash of hope, but other than that, for the majority, this baseball team consistently has shown they're not great.
No, they're not.
They don't score a lot of runs. The pitching can't go deep. If you get into the bullpen, it could go sideways really quickly. Their second best player and their second best player in franchise history can't hit the baseball. There's drama leaking out from the clubhouse.
That's the other thing. There's been a lot of drama over the last couple of weeks. Starting with Salvi at the beginning of the month, Seth Lugo. You know, the day before that, I mean, I hope that, you know, it's not to a situation where they're going to have to trade Seth Lugo because he can't operate here anymore because they're not listening to him. I hope that doesn't end up being the case. But you talk about big moments. Runners in scoring position, Salvador Perez is 4-48 on the year, Mac. 4-48 on the year is not a great spot in which to be if you're Salvador Perez in those big moments. He stunk in those big moments. 8-48. That's what it was. 8-48. And in road games this season, the Royals have scored 4 or less runs in 16 of 21 road games this season. They're averaging just over 3 runs per game on the road, which is the worst in baseball. So they can't figure it out once they leave Kauffman Stadium. And I thought last night was just an embarrassing performance in the sixth inning for the Royals. They went up there and they had the starter still in the game, who I was watching the Chicago broadcast, and Steve Stone said, God, if this guy can go 6 innings tonight, I'll dance in the streets naked. Well, he did go 6 innings and even into the seventh. And in the sixth inning, when that guy was just about done for the night, the Royals sent 4 batters to the plate and faced 7 pitches. What an inning. What an embarrassment. The Royals played in the sixth inning last night like they had a late dinner reservation in Sauget, Illinois, and they had to get down there and have dinner. That's the way that they performed in the sixth inning last night. First pitch pop-up, first pitch pop-up, first pitch pop-up, and the inning's over. What an embarrassing inning. And, Mac, I know you even thought the exact same thing as me in that situation because I texted you like, yeah, that was not good to see them perform the way that they did in the sixth inning last night. I'm going to go back to that inning and I go, that's where they kind of did it in for me. That's where I lost faith. In that sixth inning last night, first pitch, base hit, first pitch. I mean, first pitch pop-ups were basically the way that you made outs in that inning. 7 pitches, 4 batters saw 7 pitches in that inning. You got to make that guy work. You got to make that guy labor. You got to be able to go up there and take hacks that matter. And they didn't do that. And so at the end of the day, I mean, I just look at this situation and I say, the White Sox have now officially passed you. They're a better organization and they're a better major league team than what you have in Kansas City right now. And you made hay on the White Sox being bad the last 2 years, and now they're not bad, and you're sitting at 19-25. All right, let's move on to the Chiefs. And we had Mitch on earlier in the show. Mitch Holt is the voice of the Chiefs, and he's got it to where your dander's up a little bit there, youngster.
I didn't like what Mitch was saying, and I love Mitch so much, and I we didn't have enough time to really kind of debate back and forth. I wanted to hear his thoughts on the schedule, so I'm not going to combat him when he's talking about last year and stuff like that. We got stuff to get to, limited amount of time with the play-by-play voice of the Chiefs. I'm not going to sit here and go, well, actually, Mitch, here's what I think. I don't think he
doesn't
cares.
Really care
I don't
either.
Think he really gives a rip, and nor should he give
right,
a rip.
Yeah.
Okay? That's completely fine. But if you guys care, here's what I think. If you didn't listen, you can listen to the podcast, of course, when we had Mitch Holtis on about an hour ago. It just kind of seemed like a lot of excuses coming out of Mitch from last season and before the year started. I mean, it was already done because of the Brazil game, and you had to travel Seattle, and it was just too much, and you should have a bye week before and after any international game. You should have 2 bye weeks sandwiching it. And I was just sitting there and going, what in the hell, man? The schedule comes out before. You know where you're traveling, and I know it's going to be tough, and it is. But also, you've got to be able to manage that. You've got to be able to understand, okay, how do we keep our energy up? And yes, it's going to be difficult, and I've never experienced these things. So I can't speak from experience, but I can speak, hey, you're making $500 million, Patrick Mahomes. Figure it out. If the energy's not up, get it up. Let's go.
Now, that energy thing last year, I'm on your side on. I was tired of hearing that. I know everybody was kind of tired of hearing that, right? Why isn't the energy up?
Why isn't the energy? We're playing an NFL game.
Right, and this was well after the Brazil stuff had happened. I mean, so you had an opportunity to get that energy up. But it's just not the Brazil game from last year. I think it ultimately ended up being the cumulative effect of them being the Beatles and the traveling road show that they were on for the last 5 years. And that does eventually catch up to us. I was having a conversation with my 16-year-old yesterday, and yesterday was her last soccer game of the year. And they've been playing, I think they played 11 games in 14 days or 11 games in 13 days, something like that. That's a lot, dude. That's every day you're playing a game. Yep. And she looked at me yesterday. She goes, Dad, I'm just exhausted. And it was like, it's nothing that sleep is going to fix. I am just exhausted mentally. It's not go to bed, wake up, feel better. And I really do think the compounding of the pressure that mounted over that three-peat the year before, we saw the cumulative effect of all of that just all come together in one thing. And everybody just collapsed. I mean, it was just a collapsing of everything that has built up over all of those years. And nobody wants to go back and go, well, it's been the buildup of all these years. So you look at what can we kind of look at right now that's not going our way? Two West Coast preseason games and then coming back and immediately going to Brazil. And so while I do understand what you're saying, you have to find a way to get over that. There are some extenuating circumstances like the 5 years prior and all of that adding up, three games in 11 days and the Chiefs being the guinea pig, you know, for the National Football League and doing whatever they want so everybody can make more money. I think ultimately all that added up. But I will say this, and this is on Andy Reid. I heard them complaining about that in July and August before it even happened. And that's a mindset thing. And that's what you can't let happen this year. You can't let the mindset. And again, that's why I believe it's a one-off. When has Andy Reid ever let a mindset like that affect anything?
It became
contagious.
But they
did last year, and it became very contagious last year.
The whole team had it from week one. I mean, we heard it after the week one loss. Seattle didn't have the energy. And okay, all right, well, we did it after that week. Seattle all the way to Rio de Janeiro.
Right.
Okay, all right, fine. 1 week, cool, division rival, they know you well. We did all the things.
Right.
But then it stayed that way the whole
year. They never were able to get past that. And that was kind of, I think, set in July when I started to hear, because I remember talking about it, going, God, these guys are talking about this travel. Look how bad this travel is for these preseason games. And then you're going to Brazil. And that became a talking point, Mac. And when things become talking points, you let it take over and you sometimes forget the reality or the other side or how to push through, because it's like negativity affects all of us all the time, right?
It's easy to
be negative. It's easy to say that's why instead of looking inward. And they all just had a bad year last year, but I am willing to say it was the cumulative effect and all that pressure of trying to go for that three-peat. We saw them in New Orleans after the game. That was a gassed organization. They were exhausted. They probably, if you gave them truth serum, would have told you, you know what, can we just take the next year off and just hit the reset button for the entire organization? That would have been something I guarantee you they probably would have signed up for if you let them do that, because they just got to the point where they were exhausted. And now you got fresh blood in there. You got younger players in there. You can't let these things at the beginning of the year become an excuse all season long. So Andy needs to do a better job of not letting those things become big things.
I also think it's two different conversations. Like,
sure,
there's the NFL schedule, and then, yeah, you're winning a lot, so you have to play more games, and you're going to travel more because it's more games. And, like, that is totally a thing. And three straight Super Bowls, and there was bound to be a letdown. Yes, that I am totally there for, and that's a separate conversation. But when we're talking about the NFL schedule and what's fair and, oh, it's so hard, I don't give a rip. I don't care. There's nine international games this year.
Yeah, it's only getting harder,
it's
Mac.
Getting harder.
It's
for
getting harder.
Everybody. There's multiple teams with seven primetime games, multiple teams with six primetime games. Those will increase. As Mitch mentioned, there's kind of two limbo weeks at the end of the season where lots could change. So those could be increased to 8 and 7 games. So there's a bunch of teams out there with short weeks, with international, this site. And the more we go with the NFL, that's an NFL discussion and them hurting their product. But the Chiefs, and what we're talking about with the football team, you've got to be able to manage this. And if Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, if you can't, then what are we doing here? And then that's kind of where my thing is. And
I'm interested to see how the Rams handle it this year.
They've got a bunch of travel miles. Same with San Francisco.
38,000 miles.
My biggest thing is, I guess what makes me really frustrated about it, Bob, where the frustration comes out of, is I want last year to be known. That was a bad football team. And when Mitch was talking about it, kind of it made it seem like, oh, a lot of schedule, really tough. They were tired. Sure, some of that may be true.
It could all be true. Both could be. But you're not wrong.
The most important truth here is that they were bad. That team was not well coached. They didn't have fundamentals right. They didn't come out with good energy. They didn't close games. They weren't able to come back from deficits.
All things that are not what Andy Reid is all about, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's why when you start to really look at this thing and you really break it all down, the mental fatigue plus the coaching plus the it almost felt like one of those seasons where if, like, as a parent, there are just certain things, I'm just not fighting it anymore. I don't care.
You get
to that point, you get worn down. Whatever. And I'm sure it probably got to that point for those guys.
Totally.
At this point in time. Remember, Patrick Mahomes is 17-4 in the playoffs over the last however many years. That's an extra season.
Second most wins of all time.
Right. That's an extra season of football. So people can say, oh yeah, Mahomes and Kelsey, all these guys are going into year X. They're actually going into year X plus one because of whatever happened in the postseason. And they played all of those postseason games. So they've all played an extra season of NFL football during their careers because of all that success that they had. And the best way I could describe it, they look like an organization last year that just tapped out and they were just done. And I don't have an issue with that. Now.
Totally. I get that.
Now, you better rectify it.
Exactly.
And there better be no excuses this year. All that kind of stuff. Like, that was your down year.
Exactly.
And you cleansed yourself, and you probably needed that down
year. I think so. I think you needed we've talked about it so much. I mean, they actually had a full offseason. Andy Reid's able to actually get in the lab as long as these coaches do, and we know what Andy Reid does with prep. He finally had that
right,
prep time.
Right, has prep time now.
Brett Veach had obviously
prep time for the draft,
He's doing even more prep and more scouting because he gets to do that, and there's not worrying about playoff games or anything like contracts. All those sorts of things get to be handled earlier, and so now we have more time right now for these guys to be thinking about the playbook, to be working out, to be getting in shape because they're fresh, because they're rested. And I don't want to hear when we're in week 9, week 10, man, we're in a way for 4 straight weeks. We had a week 5 bye.
You're right. I don't want to hear that this year. You've also had an entire offseason now.
Yes.
You had an extra month in the offseason. So, yeah, that doesn't hold weight this year for me. And again, this year, you're not traveling to Europe. You're not traveling to Mexico. You're not traveling to Brazil. You're not traveling outside these United States. Right? I'm not.
Nope.
Right?
You're here.
Everything is within the lower 40. We're not playing in Hawaii or Alaska for some random game, right?
not yet.
On a Tuesday or anything like that. Okay. So everything's within the lower 48. Yeah there's some crisscrossing of the country is going to take place, but every team is crisscrossing the country. Every team is traveling. And you know what? We're very fortunate here now in the United States where we are. We're 3 hours from anywhere. There's no long flights this year. There's no 10-hour flights. There's no 8-hour flights. There's no 5-hour flights. The longest flight that the Chiefs are going to take this year is most likely, I'm thinking, Seattle. And that's Seattle's here in the preseason. So you don't even have to go there. The longest flight may be L.A.?
If they go from straight, probably L.A. I mean, unless they wouldn't go straight from Buffalo to L.A., right? They'll come back home.
Yeah, they would stop off.
They'll stop off here for a couple days before they go to L.A. So, yeah, no, I think that would be the longest flight.
Yeah, to L.A., and that's 3.5 hours, basically. You know, I'm looking at it right now. At Miami's a little bit longer. At Seattle during the regular season may be the longest flight that they have. It's either Seattle or Miami, and that's 3.5 hours.
And that at Seattle game, which is weird. We didn't talk about that. We play the Rams and the Seahawks in the preseason and in the regular season.
I don't understand that this year. I don't get that. That's weird to me.
That must be a thing, I guess, that I just haven't noticed that probably happens every year to other teams. I just never noticed that with the Chiefs.
I'm going to be honest with you. I looked at and I went, that seems odd. Usually you play teams that you don't play in the regular season. Again, perception could be completely wrong on this. I don't know. I haven't really studied it, but I always felt like you had these preseason games. A lot of them could be regional, like you would play the Bears or the Vikings or the Packers because it's close, but...
Well, it's nice, too, with that Seahawks game, as you mentioned, the travel. Full week of rest. That's off the Chargers bye. So you got bye week, then you play that Chargers game whole week, and then it's over to Seattle. So it's not a short week or anything weird like that. You've got a full week the next week, too, until you play the Broncos in Denver. So I think, yeah, travel-wise, yeah, those excuses aren't there, and I get some of them from last year, but I also think we just need to look at what it was. That team was not up to snuff.
Right. It just wasn't.
Up to snuff.
It was not.
And they've rectified it, as you mentioned, from what we've seen on paper. Their actions, okay, they get it.
Right.
Coaching staff, here's the draft, defense, we're going to run the football. It's like, okay, check. I'm happy.
I mean, it's crazy. They literally took every problem that they had and fixed it again. And that's why when you look at the Royals, they did nothing. They were like bamboozled in thinking that they were a good baseball team because they beat the White Sox.
It's a good segue, actually, back to the White Sox topic there, because you mentioned Vern, obviously, last night. Had some calls about what we're discussing. 22 yeah. wins in the last 2 years, 11 wins last year, 13% of your wins last season became against the stinky White Sox, who aren't stinky anymore. That was right. brought up to Vern. This is what Vern had to say, kind of in response to our thoughts.
I don't think the White Sox of today are the White Sox of last year.
Yeah, someone else already brought I don't understand what that point is, Johnny. Someone brought that up earlier in the show. Who cares how you got your wins last season? Unless we're already focused on the wild card.
I mean, I hate the idea of focusing on the wild card while we're still sitting here at the beginning of May.
Just win games, because if you're saying, oh, how can the Royals win if there isn't a crappy team in their division? Well, how do the Guardians win without a crappy team because they beat up on the White Sox? How do the Tigers win without a crappy team in the division because they, too, beat up on the Chicago White? I mean, other teams, they lost 120 games, right? They were a horrible team. Everybody beat them. So who cares what happened in years previous? How are you getting wins this year?
I think what the big concern is for fans, though, is the White Sox have gotten better and we've gotten worse.
Yep.
I mean, that's the black and white of it to me. I'm not worried about the Guardians and Tigers right now. They're better ball clubs than the Royals, you know, over the course of the last 5 years or so. But I look at the Chicago White Sox and I know they got better and the Royals didn't. So how are the Royals going to make up those wins that they got against the Chicago White Sox? Where are you making those wins up now? Because you're not getting those wins against the Chicago White Sox. And I think that's really where fans and Carrington as well for bringing up that number, you know, and then you continue to say it that this team had 11% of their wins last year from the Chicago White Sox.
13. Yep.
So 13% of their wins last year?
Yes.
How many wins did they have last year?
11 wins out of the 82, 13%.
So 82 wins minus, you know, 11, that's, you know, that's 70. You're at 71 wins if you don't beat the White Sox 11 times. So even half of that, just say you split with the White Sox this year.
Fine.
You're still an under 500 ball club. Where are you making those wins up from that padded you for the last 2 years? If the White Sox were a normal ball club and just an average ball club the last 2 years, the Royals would not have made the playoffs in 24 and they would not have been above 500 last year. Those are the facts. And now we're seeing it play out in real time where the White Sox have become a legitimate organization, an above 500 Major League Baseball team. You're 6 games under 500 and you're 2-5 against the Chicago White Sox. How does it make a difference? Right there is how that makes a difference. That's a huge difference, in my opinion.
I mean, we're breaking down the percentages. It's a huge, huge difference. And I mean, it's a fair enough question to say, well, what about the Tigers? Okay, great. The Tigers are bad this year too, but the Guardians aren't.
Right.
The Guardians got better, to your point. Like, the Royals stayed in the same place at best.
They didn't do anything this offseason. They moved a couple of pieces around.
Yeah, Thomas. Okay. Isaac Collins.
Yeah. That's nothing. It's not a move. You didn't get better.
Sterling Marte.
And when you don't get better, you get worse. You regress. When you stay the same, you're getting worse because everybody else around you is getting better. I mean, they had 10 games against the American League Central. They went 4-6 in those 10 games after starting 2-0. You know what that tells me? They're not ready to compete in the American League Central right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to find if the Guardians have played the White Sox yet more than once this year. I'm trying to find their record against their head-to-head this year because
I don't think the Guardians and White Sox have played each other
yet.
I know they haven't because I was watching, again, the White Sox broadcast last night, and they were talking about they haven't played the Guardians and I think the Twins at this point in time.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious to see. Let's see what those other teams do because I think the Guardians are going to play better against the White Sox than the Royals have. They're a better baseball team.
Yeah.
I mean, they got better. They made improvements.
As the text line points out, the 660, that's such a reality check that CDOT talked about. It is. It's the biggest thing that we're going to talk about all season long. The Royals' record the last 2 years was inflated because they had a bad White Sox team. Hey, and give them credit. You took care of business. You beat them up. But your record got inflated because of how bad they are. And they're not bad anymore. You haven't made improvements. Everybody else has gotten older. And they're passing you. Because that's what happened. They haven't made improvements on this team since 24.
No.
They've not gotten better as a roster.
No, and in 24, as great as that season was to maybe be the start of something, it turned out being the start of nothing, but it was when you played the real contender, the Yankees, we saw what this team was. It wasn't up to snuff, not even close.
Right.
A big step back. They had a good run. They got hot. ALDS, it was fun, but really, when you look at reality now, 82 wins the next year following that, 11 against the White Sox, and it's not like this Patriots in the AFC East, oh, they bad division. Okay, but they're winning Super Bowls. They're playing all the playoff teams and winning. The Royals aren't doing that. It's not like the Royals are having this postseason success and beating the White Sox and then getting the postseason and winning games when it matters. They're not.
No, they're absolutely not doing that. And so that's why, to me, and I think to a lot of fans, I think to most fans, obviously, that's why this is such a big deal, because we stayed the same, and the team that we beat up the last 2 years just passed us, just like that, overnight, just passed us, ran right by us, and they're not giving up anytime soon. They got minor leaguers that are ready to burst onto the scenes, and the Royals really don't. They got one pitcher down there. That's it.
This 816 says, don't seem to be getting better. Plus, there's been some unhappy players with the coaching staff. And as we've talked about, it's more than just the baseball at this point.
Yep.
It is now leaking out to off-field comments and tweets and rageful, angry monologues about the team sucking and me sucking or not being happy with the strategy of ABS. Yeah, it's a lot of distrust and confusion, dissatisfaction inside that clubhouse.
Yeah, distrust is a key word there that you use. Coming up here on 96.5, the Fan will do our Richards of the Week next.
Fesco and Dusty.
Every Hardee's is closed.
Well, that sucks.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5, The Fan.
Oh, Richard, I'm so happy. Hold me.
Richard of the Week.
Not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy.
All right, Mac, it is that time on a Friday where we give out our Richards of the Week, and it's all brought to you by Circa Sports. Weekend predictions brought to you by Circa Sports. It's sports betting the way it should be, circasports.com. I'm predicting for this weekend that we're going to have ourselves an unbelievable time at 10 grad parties.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, that's what we got. One tonight, got a couple tomorrow, got a couple on Sunday. So we got a full weekend.
Damn, you really do. It's never ending. I'm now learning May for parents. Whoa.
Yeah, May. Yeah, last night was our last soccer game. Oh, tonight's soccer banquet, too, on top of grad parties.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah, yep. Monday swim banquet.
I thought you guys already had a banquet or something.
I'm sure we did at some point. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
I thought that already happened.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have banquets all the time.
And there's dresses for each of these.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I look at my credit card statement. My vacations may be free, but boy, am I in debt.
That's great.
All right, so who's your Richard of the Week?
I don't know. I always struggle to find someone. I think I could do a couple of different things.
Okay.
I could go to my TikTok that I posted, which you can follow me at Mac Morey on TikTok. You can just see my max minutes on the Fan 965 wherever you're on social media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You'll see one today in a couple hours. I made one last week or 2 weeks ago saying Royals are done.
Yeah.
A little preemptive to what was happening, but it was still, they were not great. They were below 500, but I was like, they're done. This is a bad team.
Why would anybody believe a below 500 team is, I mean, why were people, I mean,
people were pissed.
Why? Your record is what I'll never forget. I'm sorry to bump.
No, this is good.
I want to tell a story real fast. And it was involving Shannon Sharp. And I've told this story. I may have told it to you. I remember one time when he was playing with the Broncos. I don't know what their record was at the time. Mac, it was like 4-4 or whatever. Let's just say it was. I said, you're better than 4-4. He goes, no, we're not. We are what our record is. We're not better. We're not worse. We're 4-4. And that's what Bill Parcells always used to say, too, when he was coaching the Giants. Our record is what our record is. We're not a 12-0 team if we're 4-4. It's just, we're not. We are what our record is. If we were a better team, our record would show it. And so I have a hard time with the, oh, yeah, they're going to be just fine. But no, your record is what your record is. There's no what should have been.
No.
And I hate that in sports. And Shannon Sharp taught me that lesson. So thank you, Shannon. So anyway, to take you for a left-hand turn there.
No, I think it's a good call, though, because I think, yes, your record is what your record is. And there may be sometimes, though, in some sports where maybe these Royals fans or whatever, these fans of whatever team may have a point, excuse me, of saying, well, you know, this loss was this, and we were actually really close, and if you look at this stat, and there may be some actual glass-half-full ways. But it's not coming from my eye test. It's not coming from when I look at the stats. It's not coming from when I look at future projections of what this team will be. It's not coming from when I talk to other baseball fans of other teams about what they think about the Royals. So I don't really know where you're getting that glass-half-full, but I'd say the Richard of the Week, I mean, to everyone, the 30-plus comments on my TikTok that said... That came in, by the way. That TikTok was posted right before the little five-game win streak.
Yeah.
They beat the Mariners and then started winning two against the Guardians. And it's great. It's just great. The comments that kept coming in each day, they'd win a game. Really? You really think this? Milk aged better than this. You gave up way too fast. Sad. I'm not giving up. I'm just telling you what I see.
Well, here's the other thing, too, Mac. The best they got was still two games under 500 at 17 and 19. So it wasn't like they were over the 500 mark, sitting in first place or anything like that.
Yeah. No, that never happened.
Yeah, no, it never did.
So I'd say Richard of the Week to people you know who have now stopped.
Oh, they're not.
Coincidentally, yeah, they're not. They're crickets now. I'm not hearing from any of those commenters. But I would say, yeah, listen, did I call it early? Was it a hot take? Yes. But to say that there wasn't any real reason to say that is kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, and I think you were right to say that because I asked you the conversation or the question last night when we were going back and forth a little bit on text, and I was like, does this team do good?
Yeah.
I'm asking.
Have Bobby Witt.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't run the bases well. They're really
terrible.
Terrible base running.
Terrible.
Yeah, they don't score runs. They don't have great pitching.
Bullpen has not been very good lately. Starting pitching is regressing.
We don't have, I mean, other than Eseg, other than Erceg, there's not really a closer that I'm like, yeah.
Right. I mean, you got Salvi, who's 8-48 with runners in scoring position. I don't know if Cags is good or not. We never get a chance to see him.
Strategically, we seem to be predictable at a lot of times, and we seem to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
Our lineups are inconsistent. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Other than having Bobby Witt, I wouldn't have a lot of answers.
No, I don't know what
and that's not doing something well.
No.
Having Bobby Witt's not. The Chiefs having Patrick Mahomes isn't doing something well.
Right. They are a team right now that is without an identity and, quite honestly, not a very interesting ball club at this point in time. Well, actually, they are because this losing has made it more interesting. Lugo being upset is interesting. Salvi being upset is very interesting. Drama stuff is interesting, but you don't want to have that. You'd rather have a team that wins some damn games. My Richard of the Week goes to Amarillo, Texas. Hey, listen to this story, okay? The third city of Amarillo employee who stole money from the homeless officially pleaded guilty. Celine Varela arrived at the federal building around 1 p.m. Monday for her initial appearance and pleaded guilty to stealing federal funds from the homeless. She faces 10 years in prison, $250,000 fine, supervised release of up to 3 years, and $41,350 in restitution. According to court documents, others were sentenced to about 2 years or less in prison. According to court documents, this lady embezzled $41,350 from money that was supposed to be used during the COVID pandemic and all of this. What a Richard.
Wow.
I mean, what a Richard.
Wow.
Right? A Richard Ett, I will call her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to make it appropriate there. Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know how people do that. How do you think to do that?
Because you're a bad human being.
I mean, that's just, that is evil.
That's bad human being type stuff. You know, stealing from others, that sucks.
Yeah, less fortunate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, she absolutely is the Richard Ett of the week. So the schedule's out. The Royals got their thing going on. The NBA is going to have a couple of big ones tonight.
Big games
tonight. A couple of big games in the NBA tonight.
PGA Championship this weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I think with the NBA and having those two game sixes tonight, you feel if you're the Detroit Pistons, you've lost your home court advantage now. And that really does suck. Who do you think ultimately ends up winning this thing? Because you're playing Friday, Sunday. So we'll know Monday morning when we come in who the Knicks are going to be playing in that Eastern Conference Finals. And it's funny how the Knicks haven't played in a while, and everybody's like, I don't care who they play now, they're winning this thing, whether it's Cleveland, whether it's Detroit. Everybody expects the Knicks to win. They're a huge favorite to win the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think there's a lot of sickos out there like me that are starting to say, let's go. Let's have them win the whole damn thing, right? But they got to get past that next round. So who wins this weekend? Who do you think it is, Detroit or Cleveland?
I'm going to go with Detroit. I'm going to go against my head and go with my gut and say that they are able to actually close out a close game in the playoffs against a team that they should. They were supposed to do it last year against the Knicks. Every game felt close. Every game felt like they were leading the whole time, and then Brunson and clutch Knicks happened. And now we're seeing the Cavs do that. Three wins in a row, and they had the first road win. So I'll go the Pistons. They come back. They win tonight in Cleveland, and they go over to Motor City, and they close it up in Detroit. I'll say Spurs-Timberwolves also goes seven.
Okay.
But the Spurs win on Sunday.
The Spurs win on Sunday. Okay, so Spurs, OKC, Knicks, and Detroit.
That's good.
Yeah.
That'll be great. That'll be fun ratings. Star players, young stars. You got a couple of older ones. I don't want to say old, but guys that we at least know of in Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns.
You've got the Knicks. And the Knicks themselves are going to draw.
Need the Knicks, man.
You need the Knicks. I told you that. Now you buy it.
No, you're right.
It's true.
Need the Knicks in the finals.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get it.
Yep. I mean, it is unbelievable. So everybody have a good.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Weekend out there. I hope you guys all stay safe. You do your fun things. You enjoy your grad parties. A lot of graduations this weekend as well. Congratulations to all the kids at Olathe East that are graduating this weekend.
Congrats.
And every other high school that is graduating this weekend. Don't graduate, man. Stay as long as you can. The real world isn't fun, but you're going to college or having some fun after that. So God love you.
Yeah, and shout out to Gert's Grill.
Oh, Gert's,
Lindsay,
great place.
And Quinn, great place. Yeah. Loved it over there yesterday.
My father-in-law's
awesome.
There all the time.
God, good sandwiches.
Ask her if they know $2 Tom. They'll know him.
Shout out to Gert's and Lindsay.
He's a local over there, so I think Lindsay knows $2 Tom. Have fun with that. They listen to the show, too.
They do. They love it.
Love you guys over at Gert's. We'll see you Monday.
See ya.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.